Celebrities have always been welcome in our homes for their ability to entertain and help us escape the troubles of the world. But during the COVID pandemic, there has been a reckoning. And many celebrities that we adored before all hell broke loose are now facing their own crisis over their inability to relate to people. And at worst, spreading misinformation that can cost people's lives.
Today, we're taking a look at Ellen, Madonna, and RuPaul, three beloved gay icons in crisis. From Ellen saying she's going to quit her show if people don't quit saying she's secretly a meanie, to RuPaul's mysterious disappearance from social media, and even Madonna spreading a quack doctor's claim that there's a COVID cure being kept from the public and that demon sperm is out to get you.
Plus, the dubious health claims presented whack as fact in Zac Efron's new Netflix daddy-son travel romp, Down to Earth.
Solving the mysterious case of the haunted mirror.
And Lifetime Channel movies go gay and Asian. What's next? Fats and femmes? We certainly hope so. Brrr. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion, and this is Feast of Fun.
Okr?
Yes, baby.
Yes.
I love that okr.
I know. Given to us by Carmen Nybarger. And it sounds like her, too, which is the weirdest thing.
It doesn't sound like Cardi B.
No, not at all.
She's kind of like
even though she trademarked it, right?
She trademarked. She tried to trademark it and wasn't able to.
Yeah. Poor Cardi.
I think, you know, poor Cardi, I think she's doing great. And she's definitely been kind of a visionary when it comes to what we are now facing. She was ahead of the curve being saying, coronavirus, shit's getting real. Remember that?
I do remember that. I was saying that for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah, and now it's real. Now we're in the thick of it. And 150,000 dead. The CDC estimates over 500,000 Americans may die before the end of the year.
Please wear your mask, folks. Self-isolate as much as you can. We can beat this if we all pull in together. Many countries have beat it, so we'll see.
Something's definitely changing, and we may never go back to the way things were, and sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse.
I want to breathe on people again, Fausto.
I want to lick doorknobs.
It's about breathing more than anything, isn't it? It's about breathing things. And you can lick a doorknob, but as long as you like maybe take a little swig of whiskey afterwards.
Yeah, you can't even go to a church and drink from the
chalice.
My favorite visionary pop star, Belcalis Almanzar, better known as Cardi B, said in a video way back in March that there would be a great reckoning with people getting fed up over celebrities coming across as out of touch or even spreading misinformation.
Mm.
The beginning of this was, I think, not so Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot's Imagine video. You remember that, right?
Yeah, I do remember that.
And we were all like, oh my God, am I going to have a job? Am I going to have food? Am I going to have a roof over my head? I don't know what's happening right now. Unemployment checks are shrinking down, and a lot of people are facing some really difficult challenges in terms of finding food and a shelter and a home.
And they thought singing John Lennon's Imagine without makeup and with poor recording would really woo people over. But people were like, no, this is not what we need right now.
And they're like, imagine all the people. And like, I'm suffering enough as it is. Thank you. At the beginning of all this stuff was Ellen DeGeneres, who began sort of this trend of celebrities commenting on the crisis from the comfort of their lavish mansions. Mm-hmm. And normally we see the entertainers on stage. We see them in a TV studio. We don't see them in the insane amount of wealth and privilege that they live in. And so we're seeing Ellen, you know, in her gorgeous mansion with, you know, like gardening staff in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, this is like jail.
Somebody's got to prune the hedges, right? Yeah. She described it as prison, right? And people are like, oh, no, you don't.
By pruning your hedges, do you mean like is that a sexual thing?
Or? Well, it could be, but, you know, she's got Portia for that.
Yeah. And Portia's also been loyal throughout the whole thing.
She's standing with Ellen.
That's what she's saying on her Instagram. Yeah.
So basically what's happening, though, with Ellen, though, is I think it's people are out of work. And I guess from a lot of her staff is coming forward now saying that she's not as nice as she appears to be on the screen. And a lot of them have lost their jobs or are furloughed or something because she used a different kind of company to film her at home. Mm-hmm. So these people that have worked with her for years are supposedly left high and dry while a new company came in to film her at home. And so now that they don't have her around, a lot of people have come forward and saying, hey, it wasn't always a great environment to work in. There was a lot of harassment going on. There was some producers that weren't very unkind to the people. And at least one of the producers was even accused of sexual harassment.
You know, I've always had a love-hate relationship with Ellen.
Yeah.
And that all started back when I was like, you know, 21 years old. I was in one of the first lesbian comedy music bars in Austin, Texas, called Chances. Mm. And I was waiting in line, and in front of me was this very attractive, blonde, muscular person. I was just waiting in line for the bathroom, okay. And I saw an attractive silhouette.
Okay.
That I assumed.
Are you coming out as bi or pansexual now?
No, I'm just describing what I saw. And the figure turns around and scowls at me because at Chances, there was only one gender bathroom at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So both men and women used
the
stalls.
What were you doing in a lesbian bar anyway?
That was the place to be at. That was the place to hang out and have fun and be a musician. And I was a backup dancer and a singer for Gretchen Phillips of the Two Nice Girls. The Gretchen Phillips Experience. I was part of the music and the punk scene. And Ellen DeGeneres, a very unknown comedian at the time, who had just gotten her big break on the Fox sitcom Open House, who she played the sassy receptionist, very much in the spirit of Bob Newhart, you know, and she says that her comedy stylings, she owes a lot to Bob Newhart.
Sure.
She turns around to me and she's like, are you going to be waiting in line in the bathroom with me? I'm like, yeah, this is it, you know? And she's like, ugh. She was like pissed off.
She didn't
off
want
about
you
it.
Near by her.
She didn't want me standing behind
she
her.
She could smell the testosterone on you.
Well, I don't think she could smell the testosterone. She just didn't, you know, she didn't enjoy having to share that space with other genders, right? Mm. And so...
You assume, right?
Well, she gave me the very clear body language and reaction to it, you know. She did not want me there. And I was just like, you know, I shrugged it off and I was like, oh my God, this is that comedian from the TV show Open House. And the only reason I knew about this is because... I was taking a stand-up comedy class, and my teacher at the time was a writer for the show.
Ah.
And so he had us watch the show, and I was like, that's why I knew about her, because nobody was watching that TV show.
Well, maybe, were you chewing gum? Because I understand that if you're going to talk to Ellen, you have to chew gum, because she's very sensitive to people's bad breath.
This is an Ellen who was in the closet. This is an Ellen who was hustling to make it in Hollywood. This is an Ellen who did not know what the future held. And she had a lot of complex relationships with herself, with the public. And then, you know, her career did really well. She got that sitcom that was about to go off the air, and she took a gamble and she decided to come out to Laura Dern on the sitcom. And for a lot of people who are familiar with feminist comedy and theater and performance art of the late 80s and early 90s, you realize that this was a lot of culture, a lot of humor that was from shows like The Five Lesbian Brothers in New York City. Lisa Kron's work was manifesting itself into the comedy of the show. It felt fresh. It felt new. It felt authentic. Mm. So the stale kind of Two and a Half Men, you know, three camera laugh track comedy became something that you could relate to again. And so it kept Ellen's show on the air for a couple more years, I believe. And then it also bombed. It also tanked. And Ellen went on the Oprah Winfrey Show to talk about her story. And half of the audience was like, feeling betrayed. They felt that she, by coming out as gay, as she said, yep, I'm gay, on the cover of Time magazine, there was a betrayal to her fans.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it seemed like Ellen's career was over, was done. And she just decided to take a gamble, like all celebrities who run into. Kelly Clarkson's doing this right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A lot. We're seeing a lot of drag queens in quarantine doing talk shows too, you know? When an entertainer sort of doesn't know what direction to go in, sometimes they think, hey, let's have a conversation with people. And Ellen launched her daytime talk show, which was a huge success. And at the core of all that was her goofy, dancey intro, her personality, that was like lighthearted, that didn't put her sexuality, her frustration, her anger, her anxiety in center focus. Instead, she had the daily sign off, be kind to one another, and replace Rosie O'Donnell as the new Queen of Nice.
But the people are saying that she's not so nice after all, right?
Yeah.
They're saying that, you know, it's a toxic work environment, that, you know, you can't breathe on her, that you're not supposed to talk to her. You know, and a lot of celebrities do have rules like that. If they're on set, don't bother the talent, don't stare at them. You know, it makes them uncomfortable. A lot of these people have like a lot of insecurities. And so you really have to handle them with kid gloves. Now, she's also coming under criticism because she's not having any kind of control over what's happening on the production side. And they feel like she should be more involved. In fact, she came forward and said in a video recently that she would become more involved because she wasn't really aware of this kind of things. And from what I understand, this is a common element of a lot of TV shows in California that are produced there. They're produced, but then like the HR system is like part of the bigger company. Like, let's say if she works for, I'm not sure if she works for Viacom or who she works for, but they would have an HR department. But her, like the own production company that makes her show, wouldn't really have anything like that. So people really felt like they had no place to go to come with their concerns.
And part of that is, you know, when you're running a large company, and, you know, Ellen's productions staff, they have like a video game, they have all these kind of online assets, all kinds of different projects, and there's a lot of money there. You need to have an HR department, because if your employees, if your coworkers don't have a place to vent their frustration inside the company, they're going to do it outside the company.
They're going to go on Twitter
and they're going to talk about it with the press. And so BuzzFeed, talked about all this stuff. But I think, you know, Ellen's troubles have been happening for a while. You know, Ellen in the past, I think she was a very vital voice for LGBT people who felt they were not seen or heard or represented in television and in media. And in a lot of ways, you know, Ellen helped to bridge those two worlds. I remember her like sort of criticizing and challenging John McCain on her show for not standing up in support of marriage equality. And you know, it seemed like Ellen was kind of be this progressive voice that was going to move society forward. But then, you know, last year, she started interviewing Kevin Hart about the Oscars and becoming kind of an apologist and, you know,
allowing him to be a homophobic and a jerk. And then, of course, you know, she's challenging Dakota Johnson, saying, oh, you didn't invite me to your party. You didn't invite me to your party. And she's like, I invited you to your party. And like, she invited the party. And Ellen didn't go because she was hanging out with George Bush, a war criminal.
And, you know, and all throughout this, people online were like, well, her goal is to bridge the divide, is to be kind to each other, to forgive each other. And it seemed like, you know, it kind of worked for her. But then something orange and demonic took over our society. That's the Republicans led by Donald Trump. And now we're facing 150,000 dead. So her message, her conciliatory centrist message doesn't ring true anymore. Yeah,
it doesn't serve us or anything like that. But, you know, it's interesting. Like, I feel like a lot of this kind of came out. It was, you know, we were talking to, we had a comedian on the show, and she recommended another comedian and said, this person wants to know if you know anything about Ellen. And Fauci was like, loves to tell the story about Ellen, at, you know, when he first met her, and that experience wasn't very pleasant. And so we talked to the comedian and then Carly, and then she came on the podcast and we're like, how mean is Ellen? You know what I mean? And I feel like people hadn't really talked about that very much before, and then we did that podcast on it, and then I must have hit like a couple of people in Hollywood, because, you know, there's people in Hollywood and production and places that listen to the show, and so I feel like that kind of got there, and so it kind of like greased that wheel for people to open it up a little bit.
I take zero ownership over Ellen's lives or success or failure.
No, of course not.
However, we were probably reacting to the zeitgeist, to the fog in the air, that was wanting to examine Ellen DeGeneres as a hypocrite. And part of it is, like, you know, Mark and I have always noticed that some of the most superficial, selfish, dumb, mean people that we've run across doing this podcast have this weird double dream that they want to come true. They either want to be a talk show host where the guest interviews them, or they want to be a guest on Ellen.
Yeah.
Either way, they want a perpetual motion machine that gives them attention and money for zero effort.
Mm-hmm.
Money for nothing and your chicks for free.
Yes, baby.
And it, at some degree, it's like, hey, you know, we all want that dream.
Yeah, right? It's a dream.
And you know, you deserve to be loved. You deserve food. You deserve shelter. You deserve education. And you deserve health care just by being you. And don't let any politician or celebrity persuade you otherwise. However, when it came to Ellen, it became a situation where more and more people started realizing that the new queen of nice, definitely became the queen of not so nice.
Well, she said she's going to try harder, right? And
at first she did.
Yeah.
And then she said, you know what? I think I'm just going to end the show. I think it's time to end the show. Was a statement that was made by her group.
It's interesting how some people are just like, you ask them to change, and rather than have any kind of change whatsoever, they just like up and quit. It's just easier. You know?
And this is a lot of that is stemming from that BuzzFeed article by Christy Lee Yandoli, who started interviewing former and current Ellen Show employees about the toxic environment of racism, fear, and intimidation. And as this started to snowball, more people started coming forward that, you know, other show producers were sexually harassing coworkers and guests on the show. And I was just like, it became this like, you know, a very much a facade, right? On the air, they're all like dancing and having a good time. And when the cameras drop rolling, it's like, you know, thundering and, you know, madness and sadness and Ellen hitting the ball and screaming at people. And even like allowing one, she in one meeting, in one story, they said one of the show producers was super cruel and yelling at one of the new employees. And she said, well, every show needs a dog to bark. Needs somebody to bite. And so now, you know, the production company just, and this is all breaking news, developing news. The show producer said that the show's going to go on and that they're doing everything possible to ensure that the employees and the guests have fun, because it's a show that brings so much happiness and fun. It should be a happy show to work on.
For sure. But, you know, and then you're also seeing all these thought pieces of like five lesbians that can replace Ellen for the talk show. It's like everybody's like ready to have her head on the platter. But, you know, she's got a strong audience. She's got a wife that's standing by her. She's got, how many hashtags did Portia use? The I stand hashtag Ellen hashtag I stand by Ellen. She's like, fans of Ellen, please come together and support her in this moment of crisis. You know, and it's like, in the end, it's up to her audience. Or is her audience watching her show? Is her audience enjoying the show?
But at the same time, I think, you know, as rotten, we've heard and experienced, you know, seen Ellen be a hypocrite as she kind of attracts people who are kind of similar hypocrites. Mm. You know, I want people to be better and to do better and, sure, and to have more diversity in the production staff, you know, certainly, you know, it there's ways for Ellen to have her cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
And, at the same time, you know, she probably is, that's going to be the end of Ellen. I don't know. It's what do you think is going to happen?
I don't think it's the end of Ellen at all. No, of course not. She's a multimedia force of nature.
Yeah.
You know, Netflix specials, her TV show. She's got, I mean, she's a cover girl for Christ's sakes, and she's like 60 some years old.
Yeah. You try being a cover girl for makeup. Well,
she's good to the apes.
She's really good. She was really great, I think, on with Jerry Seinfeld and Writing Around Comedians.
Oh, that was a great episode.
One of the best episodes, I would say. And her stand up comedy special, started, you know, revealing that she's a much more complex person. Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm like, it's a tricky thing because America doesn't necessarily want to see the real Ellen. Mm-hmm. And Ellen doesn't feel that she trusts the public with her true feelings, mm-hmm, and emotions.
Right. Also, too, when you're working on a production like that, I mean, how many people are think about yourself at your job. Let's say you're a waiter at a restaurant and you work with like 30 or 40 people. right? Do you go by and say hi to every single person?
I do.
I mean, I try to as well. I was always taught, like, you enter a room, you say hello to everybody in that room. Like, I'm not a person that walks into the room and just walks by somebody and pretends they're not there. I wasn't raised that way. I'll never be not that person.
Well, and I enjoy the process of entering mm-hmm. a room. I enjoy the process of getting to work. And you know, all the jobs I've ever had, I've had amazing coworkers. And part of that is, you know, they're amazing because I'm an amazing person. And I want to bring out the best in the people that I'm with. And they bring out the best in me. And so if Ellen feels, or anybody feels, at odds with the work environment that they're in, you know, it's a hard thing right now, obviously, in this pandemic, but think about different ways to relate to the people that you're with.
Mm.
It's tough right now. We're all so isolated at home. We don't get to see each other except on Zoom meetings. Half the people are not even wearing pants.
Well, all right.
You know,
I like those kind of meetings.
but I think it's hard to go into work in a place where leadership is dreading having to interact with
people. So what do you think? Alan's just going to pack up her Gucci bags and like call it quits and go live with her gorillas in Africa?
I don't know. I've seen a lot of talk shows who have deep pockets, doing pretty good at creating online content. And I think like the one example is The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Sure.
It's been really shining. The show This Week Tonight with, I forget his name.
John Oliver.
Those shows are doing really well online and they're producing really compelling content. However, you guys have a lot of money. You could put up a fabulous TV studio in your home. We do it. Why can't you?
Get some good lights and
these
good
guys
sound,
can't even invest in a fucking lavalier. What is wrong with you guys?
They think that for the internet, it's a different game altogether.
There's a lot of hubris there. Mm-hmm. And I don't get it. I want good sound, don't you?
I do.
I love their content. You're certainly capable of buying a clip lamp and putting it behind your camera. I don't know. So it's up to see, you know, other people like RuPaul have responded by just saying, you know what? You haters, you hating on me? Bitch, bye. I'm going to delete everything.
Because we really don't know yet why RuPaul has disappeared.
We don't know. Newsweek is writing about it. And you know, not to be outdone, Michelle Visage also deleted her Twitter account for a little while and then brought it back up because she's like, oh shit, I can't do this. And she hasn't explained why she deleted it, and neither has RuPaul. Cameron Michaels did the same. We're not sure why these entertainers associated with drag are deleting their social media profiles, and we're not. And when they come back, they don't.
I'm guessing that she's just like on a retreat or something. She's just like, well, she might, you know, she's probably sitting around writing songs, going to a recording studio, socially distancing. Maybe she's fracking in Wyoming. Who knows? Maybe she's just taking some time off. She's, you know, on hiatus. It's, you know, if you're not filming anything, why be in Hollywood? Why hang out? Why update your social media? Of course, she had All Stars 5 was still filming, or not filming, but airing. While she deleted it. So it was kind of interesting that happened, because usually you use that to, you know, did Shea Coulee, who won,
Congratulate the contestant.
Did she get a congratulations from
her?
She
did not.
You know, as far as I know. And I think it was interesting, and I maybe the listeners can help me out with the timing there, as I feel like she deleted it around the time that the episode where she was talking to Jujubee about recovery and being in like those kind of recovery meetings, and RuPaul kind of cried a little bit. You could kind of see her, and like, you don't really ever see her cry on that show or show any kind of emotion. It was the episode where RuPaul's family was there, and I wonder if like maybe that was like an emotional point for her, that she made herself vulnerable to this kind of opening up to her audience, to the fans, to the people that watch the show, and that her family being involved, and that maybe she didn't like the reaction that people gave, because it really seemed like people didn't really care. You know what I mean? That,
well,
she
we're
had
all
this kind
handling,
of revelation, right?
We're all handling crisis.
Right.
People who are in recovery are really struggling right now. You just have to open your eyes and you can see your friends and family struggling. And so, you know, seeing somebody who has was in the news just a year ago, buying a mansion in California, it's hard to have sympathy for that, even though every person deserves sympathy and compassion, regardless of how rich or poor they may be. It's just hard to relate to it when we're struggling with our own problems. And, you know, RuPaul, I think RuPaul's a pioneer. You know, she was having a hard time before anyone else was in 2020.
Oh, because AJ and the Queen got canceled?
AJ and the Queen got canceled.
Not canceled, not renewed. They didn't pick up a second season.
Well, what is that?
Well, it wasn't in production, so it's not canceled. It was just not picked up yet. It might live on, maybe on Lifetime or something.
Netflix, I'll give you a thing. Netflix didn't even give the writing staff or the production staff access to watching the first episode of AJ and the Queen, but some very unpopular YouTube bloggers got to see a lot of the first season.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we asked and begged for interview requests or copies, and we could not get them to budge or react.
No. So
the only reason we were able to interview anybody from it is because we had a personal relationship with them.
Yeah.
And then the Sherry Pie scandal hit with season 12 of Drag Race. It was the first time the show had edited out a contestant from the series.
As much as they could.
Then RuPaul, the self-saboteur, was in the driver's seat, goes on NPR, does a lovely interview with Terry Gross, Fresh Air. And at the very end, Terry Gross innocently says, "What you guys, you and your partner, George, have a ranch in Wyoming. What's that like? Do you guys have horses? Do you, drink iced tea? Do you have fun there?" And he's like, "Oh, no, honey, this is big business. We make a lot of money licensing oil and mineral rights. We're rich, rich, rich." And people are like, jaws are dropping.
Yeah, because they're like, the combination of words, I think it was something about like water extraction or something.
Water, oil, and mineral rights.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So people knew that, like, oh, it's fracking. And then somebody laid the maps over of the LaBarge Ranch with where things are fracking, and they do add up.
And then to the point that she's just kind of given up getting in drag to host the show finale of season 12. And then now there's rumors, which I think they're completely ridiculous, but they are rumors nonetheless, that she's not even showing up to tape the next season of RuPaul's Drag Race.
How could they do RuPaul's Drag Race without RuPaul?
Well, they're doing it in Canada, you know. So I don't know what's going to happen, you know. It's an interesting thing to see the future of the show go on without the host originator. I think it would be unfair, and I think they should keep the name RuPaul's Drag Race, even if RuPaul does decide to leave the show. But I don't know if they'll be able to. Will RuPaul say, "I own 51% of this company, and you cannot use my name"?
Well, you know, so what would it just be? Drag Race, right?
It's not the same. And I think RuPaul adds so much. Please, RuPaul, if you're listening out there, reach out to somebody, you know, somebody you trust, and talk about these things.
And please put a contestant on the show that has breasts.
Or put people that are different than what you've been putting in the past. Experiment. It's okay to, play a little with the show's format, have fun. Don't forget why you did this in the first place. I'd say that to Ellen.
Just to fuck things up, right?
I would say that to RuPaul. I would say that to Madonna. Poor Madonna. We went to see her Madame X tour when it came here to Chicago. And loved it was a beautiful culmination of a lifetime of a person who dedicated their career and their life very successfully to give attention to LGBT people across the world, to people of color, to Latin American and Latin global pan Latin culture, and to music. And it was just a wonderful show. And it didn't even feel like a Madonna show. It felt like a celebration of Portuguese and Madonna was in there.
It was Madonna as like Nadia Ginsburg, who's been a guest of this podcast, who does a phenomenal job of imitating Madonna and Cher and Winona Ryder and whatnot. And so it was, because it was her quirky side. She wanted to show like a bit of a cabaret show, a little bit of a pop princess show, but also you know, that she's still got it and she has artistic chops, and that that she's an artist who wants to shake things up, because the power of the artist is to disturb things.
And boy, has she been disturbing things. Now, in quarantine, we're starting to see Madonna's struggling with her health, her knees, her hips.
Mm-hmm. She had to cancel her tour.
She had to cancel her tour, and I'm sure as a dancer at first and a musician second, that for somebody whose body is giving out or challenging them, as somebody who myself struggles with my own body, with chronic back problems, it is so debilitating and so depressing and frustrating. And you just have to reach deep inside and get a lot of ice packs on your body to just overcome this stuff. And I can imagine that someone in Madonna's shoes, who's feeling so much pressure to perform, to be out there, to be in this situation is a mind fuck. Mm-hmm. So she started the pandemic in her lavish bathroom in a bath full of milk and rose petals, talking about coronavirus being the great equalizer.
Oh.
Why is that a statement?
Well, it's a statement of privilege.
A poor statement.
It's kind of a statement of privilege because, you know, somebody like her is probably not going to be that greatly affected by it. Whereas a lot of people, you know, there's whole families that, you know, they're getting together and having these family events, and like the kid comes in and both parents get sick and one of the parents dies, or both parents die and then the grandma dies. So, you know, is that equalization in your book? Is that making the world equal? I don't think so. I think it's a lot of unnecessary pain and suffering. But, you know, we have this idea in this world that everything happens for a reason. In the end, everything's going to be okay. And it's going to be along that lines of that toxic positivity. Like, no matter what happens, we're going to be okay. And it's just like, well, we have to really recognize people's feelings and what people are going through. I mean, you don't have to dwell on some of those feelings forever, but you have to at least come to some kind of terms with it.
Yeah, and, you know, we see Susan Sarandon having this idea that, like, an imperfect Democratic Party who does have its own history of not supporting the people, the American people, and putting a lot of money into war, into the military-industrial complex, ignoring the opportunities and abilities to bring in universal health care, to properly fund schools, to shrink the police department or defund the police. The Democratic Party hasn't lived up to the promises that they've had. Mm. So people like Susan Sarandon or Armie Hammer, the actor, said it's good to have Trump in charge because it's making people value progressive ideas. Mm-hmm. And
but they're still not valuing progressive ideas. Bernie Sanders, we had Trump.
Didn't make it.
We had a pandemic going on. We had people dying and our healthcare system stretched to the limits and being expensive. We don't have masks and people are dying. And the one person who was calling for, you know, universal healthcare, Medicare for all, Bernie Sanders, still didn't get it.
I don't think that Bernie Sanders didn't get the nomination because of his ideas not being good or popular with the American public. Mm-hmm. I think he didn't get it because the American public had fear and insecurity over Trump being reelected. Mm. And so, you know, because of that fear, they went with something safe and proven, which is somebody tied to the Obama administration. And that's where we have Biden. Mm. And Biden is by far a perfect candidate. But back to
Madonna.
You know, back to Madonna. And now you might see on social media the term demon sperm.
Mm.
Oh,
tasty, tasty, tasty.
Isn't all sperm demon sperm? But so there's this doctor called Stella Emanuel, who, with a collection of idiots, you know, dressing in lab coats, stood in front.
Not
of,
doctors or researchers, right? Some of these
they're
people,
just,
right?
They're just, you know, a jerk off the street. They say, hey, put on this lab coat. Here's $100. Stand there and pretend like you're a doctor. And so this Stella Emanuel says that she believes that alien DNA is being part of cures. She believes that there already is a treatment and a vaccine for COVID-19, and it's being held back on the public in order to help the Democrats in the next election.
Because Trump tweeted this, too.
And Trump is the one who's been pushing it. And I guess Madonna, either inadvertently or the last in judgment or something, she shared it on her Instagram. And of course, Instagram itself kept Madonna from sharing and showing that video.
You know, and now she's taken it down. But, you know,
if she didn't take it down. Instagram took it down for her.
Oh, they took it down for her. I thought maybe it was one of those, like, you know, this is a dubious kind of claim.
But we don't know if Madonna could just say, you know what, I didn't really get it all. Mm-hmm. My apologies. I'm going to, you know, mm-hmm. reflect on this. No, she's back to posting all kinds of garbage.
Well, and you know, she's also very into propaganda. She understands what propaganda from the state is. And it's like, is she sharing this with a critical eye, saying, like, look at this, this is propaganda? Or did she just see, because a lot of her Instagram is people of color, black people, you know, her beautiful children, dancers, musicians, these people that she's worked with in Africa and Malawi. And did she just see this black woman as a doctor and be like, I'm going to share this because woman power.
Yeah, you know? Probably.
You know, and then she was like, oh, wait.
Maybe watch the video first.
Or maybe she just, you know, wanted something controversial on her thing because, you know, Madonna will, you know, do things just to disturb you.
And that's where we leave to our top story of the day, Zac Efron. A celebrity in crisis, a gay icon in crisis.
Now, why do you say Zac Efron's a gay icon?
I would say, you know, he's somebody who has been rumored to be in the closet as a gay man. He certainly makes no efforts or interest in women. Or
well, he's been dating a girl.
He's had girlfriends, but recently he's kind of like, you know, said that he's not interested in playing the Hollywood game. Mm-hmm. And in his series and in interviews, he said that if he stays in Hollywood and he plays the game, he will not live a long and happy mm-hmm. life.
Well, he views Hollywood as a toxic environment, which he's probably right, you know.
So, hey, physician, cure thyself.
So he's got a new series out on Netflix. It's a travel. Well,
wait. So he, you know, in crisis, turned to the internet and started listening, probably to Feast of Fun, and said, nope.
Not these.
And he found this podcaster named Darren Olin, mm-hmm. who is very much, you know, if Whole Foods was a podcast, this guy would be it in person form. And he fell in love with him and he reached out to him and became close friends. And together they decided to do a web documentary series called Down to Earth. Mm-hmm.
And it's totally like a daddy son travel romp. Because you see, like, Zach is like, he loves this guy. Now, whether it's a sexual relationship or not, there's an intimacy that these two share. You know, they're riding in cars together, laughing, they're slapping each other on the back, you know, they're playing games with each other. So it's really fun to kind of see that aspect of it because you don't really get to see too many intergenerational relationships in that respect. So in that sense, like, I think it's really sweet. And you see Zach is struggling because he's like, I want to live a healthier lifestyle. I want the world to be in a better place. And I think that's where they want to take this show and show us these kinds of things. But some of their claims are rather dubious.
Well, and I think, you know, the show does a great job of bringing Zach and his daddy to Puerto Rico, to France, to Central and South America, to Europe, and focusing on the themes of you know, nature, sustainable living, green energy, mm-hmm. And it's light and fun, and full of pseudoscience mm-hmm. and dubious claims.
Yeah, for example, like there's one episode they do on water. You know, water is, you know, what we all need to survive, and it's very important to have a good, clean source of water. They talk about, and one guy, he's a sommelier, he's telling me, like, you don't ever want to drink filtered water. It's just going to be terrible for you. It's going to leach things out of your body, that kind of thing. And they're like, oh, no, wow, filtered water, it's so bad, it's so bad. And you see him agreeing with them. And then they go to Paris, and they have all these fountains of filtered water for people to drink and fill up their bottles and go everywhere. And they're like, this is so amazing. This is so wonderful. So it was like, which one is it? Is the filtered water okay, or is the filtered water not okay?
Distilled water that you put in your iron so that calcium doesn't build up when you're ironing clothes, don't drink that.
No, you don't want to drink distilled water.
Because when you drink it, it does leach nutrients, minerals out of your body mm-hmm. to balance that mm-hmm. water. All the water you're going to buy at the convenience store.
Mm-hmm.
All has something in it, you know, minerals in it.
Yeah, you always put some kind of minerals like Dasani or something like that. That might be filtered water, but then they add some minerals in it to have a better taste.
Now, actually, some of those waters are garbage and mm-hmm. some of them are really good. And what people are doing on the internet is they're buying pH testing kits. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are very acidic is not going to be as good for you as one that's more alkaline.
Mm.
Just because of the human body doesn't want to be, you know, a lemonade is delicious, but it is acidic and you want to, you know, pH balance and so on and so forth.
There's some confusion about that kind of stuff. But they also say it's like, you know, if you have like an acid stomach, sometimes they say like, you know, you could have a little bit of lemon juice in it because like, even though that has acid, it's not as much acid as the acid that's in your stomach.
So here's a list of from insider.com of the ridiculous claims the show makes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, before I go into this, I think, you know, as a society, we don't make a lot of space for men to have deep emotional relationships
mm-hmm.
and to show affection and physical intimacy mm-hmm. with each other, even if it's not sexual.
Right.
And I think, you know, do I think Zac Efron and his daddy have a sexual relationship? I hope so. You know, as someone said, I think who was the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race that Shea Coulee lost to?
Sasha Velour
said, "You don't need to be gay to be a drag queen, but when you become a drag queen, you surely want to be gay." And same goes for, I think, you know, with these friendships. I think, you know, part of it is like there's value in having that intimacy. And, you know, we're so lonely as a society that when we find that relationship, and I want everybody out there to find Darren Olean, their mm-hmm. daddy. It may not be somebody you're sexual with, but find those father and mother figures, those paternal figures that nurture you and love you unconditionally and encourage you to be playful and look at the world with a sense of wonder. And I think that Down to Earth shines at that. Mm-hmm.
I remember having a conversation with your mother who says she didn't have a good relationship with her own mother.
Yeah.
So in her life, she found other mothers. And she's just like, I have, besides my original mother, I have like three other mothers. You know, I have the woman who raised me. And then I found this person that was a mentor. And then I found this person. And that person was a mentor.
And if we can be that person for you, we would love to be for that.
And if you guys want to do a Netflix travel show, I'm all for it. As soon as COVID is over.
Well, that's mm-hmm. actually one project mm-hmm. that I actually asked for funding mm-hmm. from NPR and Google. This is because we got declined for it. But one thing we wanted to do with Larry LaFontaine is very similar to Down to Earth, where we were going to travel to Latin America and talk to LGBT people. Gender nonconforming people in Latin America mm-hmm. about their way of mm-hmm. life. And unfortunately that did not happen, but it's a dream. It's something that I want to come true. Yeah. However, it's really fun to look at the ridiculous Whole Foody claims presented at the show. The first one is goat's milk being somehow magical and pasteurized
mm-hmm.
Compared to cow milk.
Yeah. So pasteurization, for you folks out there that don't know, is when you heat up milk so that it kills any kind of like bacteria in it. Because you can, if the cow or goat has some kind of disease, you can get it. Just like how you can get HIV from human breast milk, you could get something similar from that kind of thing. So they were saying that they're having Zach milk the teat himself and then drink some of the goat milk and told him it's already pasteurized. Now, I think that they meant homogenized or something instead.
Which means that the fat manifests itself differently in goat milk than it does mm-hmm. in cow milk. It doesn't separate and form a cream layer. Mm-hmm. So it does not need to be shaken up mechanically like cow milk in order to homogenize it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that it's safe to drink untreated. And even, you know, people who do milk farm animals do warm up or heat up the milk to prevent illnesses and sickness from it. Mm. And then the other claim that they make is genetically engineered crops are full of poison.
They're killing the bees, right?
And that's why they're killing the bees. And, you know, the thing about it, like, there's a lot of controversy, and genetically modified crops is very complicated. One of them is we would have a lot more deaths on this planet, and people would suffer a lot more without genetically modified crops.
Mm.
However, also corporations like Monsanto want to have a patent on our food supply. And so anybody who grows corn, anybody who grows wheat or rice has to pay them a little money, a rights for that patent.
And then these giant monocultures have a devastating effect on the environment. You can't have like this one type of corn taking up thousands of acres of a farm somewhere and then nothing else is around. What you need spaces for other things to live.
And that's why I feel like, you know, genetically modified crops as patent should be owned by governments and not by corporations. For that reason, because, you know, humanity deserves to eat and to live. You deserve to live. And so one good thing about genetically modified crops, which is actually the opposite of Zac Efron and his buddy Darren making the claim, is that they actually rely less on pesticides because of their ability to be resistant to the pest. Mm-hmm. The insect that is trying to eat it.
Mm.
So instead of having a pesticide that kills bees, which are good and bad to, you know, other insects, genetically modified crops rely less on pesticides for that. So genetically, I would say genetically modified crops, as long as we're having a good conversation and it's not allowing monoculture and giving people the ability to choose in the grocery store, I think it's a good idea to have. He also makes the claim that putting your bare feet on the floor resets your biological clock.
I've heard a lot of people say that. You know, I don't know if it resets your biological clock or not, but there is something about having your hands in nature. They say that happens, you know, it can increase your happiness. Just being in a forest can help with feeling low. It brings you back to life. It gets good bacteria onto your skin. So there's something to be said for being au naturel in nature, but I don't know if it could really set your biological clock.
I think, you know, when you're traveling overseas, definitely going for a walk in nature. Walking children in nature, as Sammy Brown likes to say, it is good for you, you know, but thinking it has some sort of like, you know, magical ability to reset your clock is a little bit of exaggeration. I think the most dangerous claim they're making on the show is the vegan diet can cure cancer. And we certainly have seen famous, rich, powerful people. Steve Jobs from Apple is a famous example of somebody who was facing life-threatening cancer and decided to go on an all-fruit diet. Good thing his name of his company was not like Windows, because he'd been eating Windows
instead of Apple. Now, there's a lot to be said for a vegan diet and a calorie-restricted diet. They look at people throughout the world and they figure out who's got lives the longest, and it's people that live on a calorie-restricted diet. So, you know, being having lean body mass is important for longevity in general. Now, of course, there are some people with larger body masses that do live a long time, but when they look at people who are over 100 years of age, they're usually quite lean and active.
Honey, if starving to death means I don't get to live to be 100, and feed me, feed me now.
But you also have to look, you know, when you can be bigger like that, it's, you know, it's usually a symptom of something else. You know, I know for myself, like I eat because like I have anxiety, you know, or depression, you know, I'm not eating because I'm like, ooh, I'm happy, I want to eat all the time.
There are worse things you can do.
Yes, there are definitely worse things you can
and,
do.
And if, you know, having a box of chocolate chip cookies means you're put down the heroin needle, the crack pipe, Eat the goddamn box of cookies.
Now, Susan Jerbik, who is on this podcast before, she's the psychic buster, right?
Yeah.
She and a group of friends from the skeptics organizations that she worked with, they worked on the Wikipedia entry for Down to Earth with Zac Efron. And they have links to like all these different articles being like criticizing it for this and criticizing it for that, for the superfoods and, you know, the veganism and the raw goat milk, all that stuff.
What's the whole concept of superfoods and why is that like bullshit?
Well, you know, they're like these. This is like how is like a kale a superfood compared to like the zucchini? You know what I mean? I mean, they actually say like when you look at like something like kale is hailed as a superfood, they're like, here are 10 things for you that are better for you than kale. And, you know, how do you judge that? Parsley is more of a superfood than kale, I guess.
But you're not eating a big salad of parsley. Right. You're eating parsley on the side. And usually when you're eating parsley, it's on top of, you know, twice-baked potatoes.
And so when they say it's a superfood, it's they also say it's because they have a large a marketing corporation behind them saying, like, this is a superfood. You should
acai
eat.
Berries, goji berries.
You know? And your diet should mostly be fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
You know, you like everything in like your diet should be mostly that.
I'm not a vegan, but I play one on TV occasionally, you know, and part of it is like, it's good to increase the, in fact, you know, one of the things we would love to do once this pandemic ends, hopefully it'll end soon, is to start a new season of Cooking with Drag Queens with all vegan recipes.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
All we vegan. Go veg, baby. Yes. Veg.
So send us your favorite vegan recipes.
Because there's there's a lot of vegan foods and recipes that people from like, especially Latin American culture, that people have no idea exists. They don't even know about TVP, texturized vegetable protein, carne de soya, which makes amazing tacos, darling.
Ooh, and I want some of that.
Tacos are everything. negative ions make you feel better. And there's, you know,
Is this back to Zach and the
Zach the thing? False claims? And part of it is like, I think that's, you know, the ionizer. My father used to have this thing he would buy on TV called the pulsera de balance, the bracelet that balances you and had magnets on it.
Oh. But you can buy an ionizer for your home, right? And it's supposed to like have that smell of after like a thunderstorm, right? Isn't that supposed to have that fresh, clean?
I guess, but I don't
know
if it like a lightning storm. Anytime I've ever smelled those things, it just smelled like, you know, like a hair salon.
Mm.
You know, it did not smell good. And so, you know, part of it is like a lot of that stuff is it feels like sometimes like, you know, we're under attack as a country because you like go on social media and there's always an ad for some bullshit product from some far off land that even if you order it, never shows up. And when it does show up, it's just like snake oil. It's garbage. And my mother falls for it all the time to the point that me and my sister had to like have an intervention, just keep her off.
She
was getting all that hooey stuff. And it was like, she doesn't even use it. Like it would just arrive and, you know, her balancing bracelet just sat there on the kitchen counter. She's like, I don't like wearing it.
She'll give us like these gifts at Christmas and you're just like, this is useless.
Yeah.
Like why
well,
she
even like
that?
The hemp oil that she was buying. And like I tasted it. I'm like, this doesn't taste like hemp oil. This tastes like, you know, canola oil with a little food dye. Yeah. So it's not even real stuff. And that brings us to the case of the haunted mirror.
Oh, the Facebook haunted mirror.
This is such a good story. And I wanted to share this with you guys. There's on Facebook, we're part of a queer swap meet, like a place where LGBTQ people can put the junk in their houses they don't want to sell.
You can swap it, give it away, wherever neighborhood you live in the United States, look for like a queer swap thing. So you have like-minded people.
And this individual put it in an ad here with a big, tall mirror, said haunted giant mirror, $100, a beautiful 7-foot tall mirror is for sale, probably from the 1920s. Definitely haunted, maybe even cursed. I paid $150 for it today, plus $70 to move it, but it is haunted as fuck, and I want it gone. There's even an elevator in my building. I can help you move it.
So what made it haunted?
So because the person who posted it didn't explain what was going on, everybody's imaginations went wild.
I want to know.
And they're like, this is like American Horror Story. It's the mirror that saw terrible things happen in front of it. And you said...
I said, well, she probably thinks it's haunted because every time she looks into it, she sees a monster.
So I, Detective Fausto, got on the case.
Mm. What did you discover in your... case study.
I started examining the comments, and the owner said that they had downloaded a tarot card deck, and when they asked the app about the mirror, they got the card of death.
Ooh.
And I'm guessing probably the owner didn't like how hard it was to clean this large old glass mirror and how it dominated the space in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, they or their roommate had a bad dream and consults the tarot card app,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, like fortune cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And tarot cards and mirrors are very... The death card and a mirror is very similar, actually. It's about how we transform in life. When you look into a mirror, you are challenged by what you think you look like, but what you see. And the death card is very similar. It's about... something ending and a new mm-hmm. thing changing.
Yeah.
It is not death in its finality. It's about transformation.
Sometimes it is death, though, too.
No, right? The death card is not about death. The death card is about transformation.
Well, sometimes you're transforming from being alive to being dead.
There are different cards in the tarot mm-hmm. card deck that talk about that.
Oh.
The death card, in its essence, is about transformation. And even the power of a tarot card deck isn't its ability to predict the future or find hidden spirits lurking among us. Its power is to spark your imagination into looking at the things and challenges you face in creative new ways.
Mm.
Most of the time, this game of self-solitaire can be fun and helpful, but the danger lies when somebody is already struggling with negative thinking or depression.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything they see, including the tarot card deck, even the death card becomes an ominous, dangerous omen.
Okay.
And that's why it's so important to use these kind of imagination sparking tools with another person who can guide you into thinking about positive solutions to difficult problems. That's all. And I think the tarot card can be an amazing tool to unlock new ways of thinking about things, but it's really important to do it with guidance, with somebody you trust.
Mm.
And if you're doing it by yourself,
don't let them put ideas into your head.
Well, and part of it is, you know, when you're struggling with something, when you have, there's a lot of uncertainty, there's no leadership right now. There is a lot of bad things around the corner. We're dealing with a lot of death. It is so important to look for solutions, to look for creative new ways to face the demons that we do have.
So what happened to the mirror?
She sold it, got all her money, and she said, thanks, internet. Bye. And I just thanked her, and I said, you know, thank you so much for this adventure. And
it made
this
you so happy to think about that haunted mirror.
It was really fun. It made me think of Scooby-Doo. And
what would you say if I brought that haunted mirror home?
Oh, my God. It'd be like, get the thing out of the house. Get it out. Out.
It was awfully big. That's the kind of mirror you want to get a little frisky in front of.
Well, like the gym that we work out at with face masks, mm-hmm. with safety distance and hygienic protective measures is full of these giant spooky mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, they had a lot more, but they've broken. And so I love the crazy, spooky, giant mirrors, but I don't like them in my home because it's just full of dust and they're just, you know.
Yeah, our large mirror is very streamlined.
Yeah, we have one of those IKEA mirrors mm-hmm. that cost like $20
mm-hmm.
and it's super light, super easy to move around. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's why I want to leave you guys with that is that it just, you know, look for creative ways to overcome the demons that we face, and it's okay to ask for help and think about tools to spark your creativity.
Mm.
That's all.
Yeah, be creative.
Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people like you.
Become a Plus member at feastoffun.com/plus and support the show. We couldn't do this podcast without your support. And you can also join us on Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun.
Yes, honey. It's time to spend some money on Feast of Fun-ty. We're on Patreon. You could get all the bunch of access to videos and recipes, new Cooking with Drag Queens episodes that no one else has seen. And it's all there waiting for you. Next one is Disasterina from season 2 and season 3 of Dragula, the search for the world's next drag super monster.
If maybe you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can do that at feastoffun.com/donate. And finally, I guess, farewell to hot talk show legend Regis Philbin. He died of heart disease at the age of 88.
Yeah.
And before he even got in the ground, people were like, he was so annoying. And like service people like all over were like on airline stewards or airline attendants and like servers and restaurants I see on Facebook. And like, the guy just died. Like, I don't care. He was a jerk.
He was an asshole. That's Regis Philbin talking about himself.
And he's like, if you're a server in a restaurant and he's going to ask you for some water, it's like, what's he going to,
I'm parched here. Can you bring some water, please? Oh, my God, I'm dying. he was a talk show
legend,
and God, he had super long career and just this inability to fill up time and entertain people.
And he did that show for eons, right? Yeah. I mean, he did it with Kathy Lee, then he did it with Kelly Ripa. She's all ripped up about it.
I'll say. She's married to Mark Consuelos.
He's ripping her up.
Woo, baby.
Woo.
Yes, honey. Yeah. And, John Boehner, Boehner, he's in the news, the original Orange Republican, rotten to the core, who once was unalterably opposed to marijuana, is now one of the top lobbyists for the recreational marijuana industry. And I was talking about this with Vivacious, who does a...
she did some deep research.
Twitch.
Yeah.
Every afternoon, I think at the 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock Eastern time on Twitch, she does a DJ set.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely go check it out, guys.
Quarantina Dance Arena.
Quarantina Dance Arena, Vivacious NYC on Twitch. Follow her. And she was like saying, yeah, John Boehner. Boehner. He had to resign being one of the top Republicans because his daughter married a Rastafarian.
Uh-huh. And now... He was adamantly opposed against marijuana. Now he's a lobbyist for it. So it's, how that goes.
Her daughter's husband one time was arrested and put in prison for having possession of marijuana. And the irony that this asshole now is making record amounts of money
as a lobbyist,
Lobbyist for the recreational marijuana industry.
That's Republicans for you.
It's just fucked up, girl.
And Hallmark movies, I'm sorry, Lifetime new movies announced on Monday that they're going to have a queer Christmas special and also an Asian Christmas special.
A butt of Christmas to remember.
No, it's called
a large cock.
The Christmas Setup. Hugo, a New York corporate lawyer, and his best friend Madeline head to Milwaukee to spend the holidays with his mom, Kate, who is also in charge of the local Christmas celebrations. Ever the matchmaker, Kate agrees for Hugo to run into Patrick, Hugo's high school friend and secret crush, who has recently returned after a successful stint in Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley is just getting plastic surgery. We got to rename that where people go to get silicone,
becomes
Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm.
And so she tries to hook them up. And then, but they're also coming up with like their first Asian special, like it was called A Sugar and Spice Holiday. And it's about a rising young architect returns to her small hometown in Maine for Christmas, where her Chinese American family runs the local lobster bar. Following the loss of her beloved grandmother, who was a legendary baker in the community, Susie is guilted into following her grandmother's footsteps. And so, she's going to find some love in town.
I've always said, why should Tyler Perry have all the fun?
Nowhere in the Torah does it say Tyler Perry shall have all the fun.
Well, because Tyler Perry basically does these very sentimental morality tales of unexpected romances and, stories where everybody's not evil or bad. They're just misguided. Mm-hmm. Although, I think in some of his movies, some people are really rotten. And they get their just desserts. And, part of me is like the Hallmark Channel and those Lifetime movies can be swing conservative, but they're also fun to escape and just look at the ridiculous nature of it. It's this innocent world where you know, the worst thing that happens is that somebody ordered the wrong croutons on their salad, you know? So like, we actually wrote down, all the food that was eaten in one episode.
Or mentioned.
Mentioned in the one episode of Good Witch. And I have it here.
Okay, one episode. This episode's how many long? 42 minutes long?
42 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
Ready.
Blueberry bran muffins, maple glazed salmon, yeast raised glazed donuts, a BLT with light mayo and no tomato on the side, cinnamon rolls, homemade cocoa, herbal tea, chamomile tea, maple glazed salmon again, risotto, buttered asparagus, watercress salad, guacamole, popcorn, corn chips, poached eggs, over easy eggs, grilled cheese, croissants, orange pekoe tea.
This is over 20.
Blueberry muffins, chamomile tea, coffee, tea, pastries, cream puffs, specific cream puffs, lemon squares, Swiss cheese sandwich on whole wheat, a box of chocolates, a Monte Cristo sandwich, which was most of the episode was talking about that stupid Monte Cristo sandwich.
Oh, I love a good Monte Cristo sandwich.
A pecan glazed bundt cake, a fruit salad, brownies, and a cup of coffee.
I think this was an episode and a half.
That is maybe so, but god damn, that's
two episodes.
You know, they should call it good.
Good eating.
Good eating, not good witch.
Now I'm hungry.
So, you know, so we joked about it. Is what's next? The good fats and femmes. And, you know, it's like, I think it'd be fun to, you know, explore different identities and experiences in the Hallmark Channel and the Lifetime movies. And, you know,
let's make a Feast of Fun Lifetime movie about it.
Yes. About the drag queen who discovered her soul.
She had a heart after all.
Yeah, she was rotten. Well, that was like one of the last things Carrie Fisher did was the Christmas Carol for the Hallmark Channel. And she plays like the ghost of basically the Jacob Marley. And she's like, you don't want to be like me, Scrooge. You want to learn, you know. So she's Carrie Fisher is this overworking, capitalistic, money hungry, greedy advertising executive who died. And now she's haunting the young woman who, you know, she left.
Wasn't the young woman she's haunting, was she in Good Witch too?
I think she may have been. Was she the- They're all like, well, it's fun because, you know, some of these Hallmark Channel things, you have like retired actors, like the one who played the Borg Queen. She's now the queen of this like fake
small European country.
Yeah. And she's like
the Christmas prince.
The Christmas prince.
She's the queen mother.
And so anyways, Carrie Fisher is plays this, you know, moralistic tale.
It's terrible.
And it's terrible. And Carrie Fisher is like, I'm just high, I'm having fun, you know, whatever. It must be fun to film these things.
I would imagine.
You know, so so there's gonna be more gay stuff with the you know, smarmy, crazy, sentimental gay stuff coming your way. Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. I know times are tough, but together we can overcome them.
Yeah, we sure will. We stick together, we're a community, and we are strong.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.